Alrighty then, sorry for the long intro, but my recorder wasn't working, and now it is! Gotta have a recorder that works. Good evening. Hello, I'm Rick Moore. This is North Shore Sports Night on MSONewsSports.com. I'm Rick Moore, as I said, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, our sports director, Bill Newell, and a cast of thousands. And we have been doing this, as Tim and I figured out last week, since about 2006, I guess, 2005 in that range. So it's either 14 or 15 years, and we're still doing it. Tim, how you doing?
I'm good, Rick. How are you?
Well, I'm here. Are you there?
Yes, I'm the family.
Oh, hold on here. This mic is... See, you're not here, and everything gets messed up, man. Jeez, Louise. The mic won't stay where it's supposed to be. The family is okay. The fat cat... Hold on, I got to try to fix this mic, and it just won't stay. Golly, why won't this stay on? It never had this problem before. It just keeps falling. There we go. All right. The fat cat seemed to be a little under the weather, but the black cat's okay. Other than that, we're all doing all right. We're hanging in there, and I'm knocking on wood as I say that. How are the Kearns's there over in Beverly?
We are fine. We are fine. Abiding by the rules.
Good. Good. A couple of things I want to mention, talk about. I guess, let me give you the lineup first of all, Coach. Tonight, Bill Newell will be talking with Marblehead Baseball Coach Mike Giardi. Also be checking in with the North Shore Navigators player Jack Wallace, who is from Winthrop High School, and that'll be cool to listen in on that. We'll be talking with Gary Larrabee at the bottom of the hour, talking a little bit of Tiger, a little bit of non-sports as well. I'm going to check in with Mike Grenier and pick his brain, maybe clear the sports attic, as I guess that's what everybody is doing now. And as I was mentioning, Tim, before we started here, I haven't listened to sports radio in Boston in almost 2 months.
Well, you know, I go on for moments, and I enjoy the Noontime guys on 98.5. I enjoy Zolak. I think he's entertaining. His compadres, I can leave, but I find Zolak, and I think it's because of his experience of having played sports on a very high level, and so he understands the mechanics. He understands the mechanism of professional team sports, and but you know, the rest of them, to me, just guys that never made the team and always wanted to be a superstar. So I have very little patience for them and their opinions.
One thing I was very pleased to see was Christopher Gasper getting picked up by Channel 5. You and I know him. We knew him before he was Christopher Gasper, so it's great to see him on Channel 5, I think.
Yeah, Chris Gasper came to Gloss and interviewed me for the Globe when he first started there back 2002, I think it was. So, yeah.
Well, he came to a couple of games, and he was our between periods guest and so on. Yeah. Very knowledgeable young man.
And very gracious, you know, to step in, as most of those guys from the Boston stations are. You know, Mike Lynch, I was able to speak to him several times during football seasons, going to the Swansea games, especially the Swansea Marblehead Thanksgiving Day games. Those were huge. So those guys always step up, you know?
Yeah, good guys, most definitely. Of course, Lynch goes back way back. When Bill and I first started broadcasting at WESX, he was a high school basketball official at that time, and he also applied for the WESX sports director's job before Bill got it. And it wasn't that Mike got turned down. He did not, but he ended up on Channel 5 like a few weeks after he interviewed at ESX. But yeah, good guys. And the other thing is... the other one I want to mention is Michael Hawley. I would love to see Michael Hawley on a Boston major station as well, rather than on the cable thing, because I think his talents would be much more appreciated. He's another guy who's very knowledgeable, very cool, funny as a bozo, but respectful. Anyway, that's just my opinion. Tim, I want to ask you one more thing. I'm going to ask the guys this too as we talk. I think it was in this week's paper, today's paper, maybe the papers, plural, that the Salem News guys and the Gloucester sports editor. I'm not sure about Newburyport. They were talking about their favorite places to watch a high school football game from. And I wonder what yours is.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, I've lived in Beverly, you know, since 1993. And while I was dating my wife, we used to go to quite a few Beverly games. We always went to Thanksgiving with a large group of her friends. And you really appreciated her stadium with the grass. The old Bertram Field in Salem was another old classic stadium. The old Manning Bowl in Lynn before they tore it down was a classic Depression-era construction. You know, Hearst Stadium was built during the Depression. They were all funded by the Works Progress Administration and on the Civilian Conservation Corps. And so we have a lot of these living relics from a very important historical time in the nation's history. But I personally, on the home side, it was such a great place to go, and the lack of stands now takes away, but adds a different dimension to it, because now you can go and families sit on the grass and bring blankets or lawn chairs, and they sit and watch the game, and you're on the shaded side of the field, so it's always much more comfortable. But the field is you talk to coaches, and they just love to go to Hurd because it's natural grass. It's what the game was originally played on. It's how the game should be played. The field crew does us an and I think it's a field crew of one, does us an absolutely great job of maintaining that field. The thickness of the grass, the spring of the turf itself. I mean, it's just one of the best places to play. It really is.
Okay, well, that's cool. We'll take a survey with the other guys as well, so Hurd Stadium gets out on top for Tim Kearns. We're going to take a break, come right back, and with Bill Newell, who'll be talking with Marblehead Base Yard Weird Times. So please stay with us. This is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday evening.
MSO News Sports is a unique multimedia website providing exclusive news and sports content for the North Shore. Our goal is to keep you connected to your local neighbors throughout Essex County and beyond. We feature the best of the North Shore, and we couldn't provide this service without the powerful support of our local sponsors. Rally. Just like us, they know. Check out all of our podcasts and email us at MSO News Sports to the best of the North Shore. MSONewsSports.com. Mike Giardi, baseball coach at Marblehead High School, is joining us here on North Shore Sports Night.
Mike, welcome. Thanks for taking a few minutes to join us.
No, thank you. You know, it's obviously a little bit tough, you know, being stuck, but anything we can do to kind of change up the pace and get some words out to everybody and say hello is awesome. So thank you for the opportunity.
Mike, it would have been a nice day to be at Seaside Park, a Monday afternoon game. I don't know.
Try to stay away from looking at the schedule. It was tough enough today because I decided to get out of the house and early this morning ran by the fan after this fantastic weekend of weather that we had, and you know, just tough, you know, how much I think some things that we've had and to get outside and stuff like that. So now you really for the kids not being able to get out there and get out.
Mike, tell us about the that you have had with they're not supposed to be doing that. I tell players what were players doing say that there was no season at all.
Just because the us to back off, I think they want too much interaction ahead of time. I think they didn't want kids feeling pressured by coaches and stuff like that. Obviously, you know, we would send out an email every once in a while just to check in and say, you know, we're hoping that we're going to be back in school. I knew that we weren't going to school and we really weren't going to be having sporting in physical shape. I mean, there's really playing a specific sport like football or basketball. It's tough to get in game shape, right? Baseball is probably the ball is get a tee or something like that, but you're not seeing live pitching. You're not going out there and taking ground balls on a field, but you're telling you guys, you know, just keep yourself in the best shape possible, and hopefully we'll be able to come back on, you know, today was supposed to be the day. You know, if we came back today, we were going to be able to really get going. I think when the extension happened, you know, we first went out in late March or mid-March, and we knew that there was a possibility. All right, we may come back May 4th. We'll have a short preseason and then get right into the games again, but at least give the kids something. And then didn't say much to the kids except for the fact, just keep yourself going. And then, of course, the word came down that the governor, that really just canceled everything. The MIAA announcement was really a formality. But we reached out to our kids and told them we would try to do something, try to connect with them at the, when everything is lifted, and have at least some sort of small get together, particularly for the seniors. I mean, we had three guys that had been really playing a ton of varsity baseball for us, with Eric Gonzalez, Ryan Masters, and Luke Curtis. And we had three guys that had been coming up that we were looking to really help out with us. You know, Max White, Cole Riskin, and Jacob Nagel, and a couple other seniors who decided to come back in the baseball. And we were like, you know what? It's just great. It's great. It's going to be a good year. And we were looking for some big things from our program this year, and it's unfortunate that it's been taken away. And you understand the reasoning. It's just hard to tell kids, over and over again, I'm sorry, I feel bad for you. But the reality is we just protect everybody.
Mike, playing beyond the high school level, did you have any of your seniors at college level? And then also, tell me about the juniors. I know every junior across the country is impacted the same way, that they don't have a season. But, how are they impacted by this as far as Marblehead is concerned?
I think you're looking at two different, populations. You know, the seniors essentially know whether or not they're going to go on and play at the next level. This is really their farewell tour, so to speak, for high school. For a lot of them, they're not going on. You know, I know that Eric Gonzalez and Ryan Masters were both considering playing and moving on. And Cole Riskin, who didn't have any varsity experience, but had done a great job coming up through and had really looked to improve, was looking to play at the next level. Haven't made any final decisions on schools just yet. Of course, this is the week that usually they make those decisions. Luke Curtis as well. He was looking to continue on somewhere. But, you know, trying to find a school that matches them and, is this where I really want to go? And I think, you know, we didn't have any guys that were a D1 prospect, but, you know, we had guys that were looking to play at potential D3 schools. And that's obviously a little bit tough because they're hemming and hawing back and forth on what school to go to. And as you said, the juniors probably lose out a little bit more. Being a spring sport and a spring recruiting sport, you can't wait to be looked at your senior year. I mean, by then, most colleges already have a good idea of what student athletes are coming to their school. So they're trying to make, get out and look at kids that are juniors right now, because that helps them with their recruiting process. You know, it's a little bit different. You know, coaches can get out their senior year and see them because decisions really haven't been made by the time the season comes along. Baseball is a big difference. That's really going to impact a lot of our kids. I think, talking to some friends that coach at Southern schools down in Florida or North Carolina, they had started their seasons. They got about 10 games in. So maybe some colleges did have a chance to look at some juniors down in that area. But up here, we weren't even close to starting yet. So now you just wonder, are they going to get an opportunity to be looked at over the summer? Because that is also out there, as a potential loss for a lot of these players too. You know, you look at the Cape League closing down, and I believe NECBL was right behind them and closing down. And you wonder, is there going to be any kind of baseball for these kids, any kind of summer sports for any of the kids out there? It's really tough. I know the North Shore League is right now trying to figure out what we can do for a lot of the guys, because we have a lot of college kids that didn't have a season. They're looking to get something in as well.
Yeah, you're referring to the North Shore Baseball League, Mike, where you are still playing, I presume?
Well, I still hang around. Let's put it that way. Coach Gridley and I, we love coaching and we love being around the game as much as possible. For me, I'm more the fill-in guy. If we don't have a guy that can play this position or that position or a particular night, summer ball is a little bit different. It's guys that can make it. We kind of cater first to the guys that are coming out of college. We want to give them the opportunity. But if, they're trying to get either summer internships or summer jobs, and sometimes, we play a lot of night games, 7:30, 7:45, but the 8 o'clock game can be a little bit tough for guys that might be commuting out of Boston. So every once in a while I still get thrown in the mix, you know, and for me it's a lot of fun. The age is starting to catch up with me. The eyesight is starting to catch up with me, especially every once in a while when Coach Gridley looks at me and says, "Hey, can you catch tonight?" And, you know, an umpire turns to me and goes, "Aren't you going to block that ball?" I said, "I'm 47 years old. The likelihood of me going down and blocking it is slim and none," and Slim left the building. So, but it's a lot of fun. You know, I like being out there. The interaction is the big thing. And I think, you know, talking with, you know, Eric Gonzalez and Ryan Masters, it's not so much the games that we miss. It's, you know, there's nothing better than going down on a field, you know, every afternoon, especially when it's nights out like today, and taking ground balls, taking batting practice, joking around with the coaches, having fun out there. And that's the things that I think everybody misses, is the interactions. And it's the same thing with school. I have kids that you would say, that, you know, that often say, "I hate school," and now that are reaching out and saying, "Man, I miss going every day. I miss talking with people." That's what is the reality now.
Oh, you're right. Good teachers really do enjoy the interactions with the students, and that's a great. I want to just share with the listeners that I wanted to ask you about the other sports in the other seasons, and I'll just focus on the ones that you've been involved with. You are a three-sport coach, so it's baseball, basketball in the winter, football in the fall with the Marblehead football program, and then. As a high school athlete at Salem, Mike, football player, basketball player, and baseball player. So, and you perform well at all levels there. So what's the multi-sport, how is this might be impacted?
Well, I think, as you said, just the interaction is tough, you know, being in a technically isolation. I mean, there's only so many, as you know, phone calls, Zoom, you know, conferences, you know, getting on the computer, staring at screens all day. I'm big with my kids on just getting out there, you know, go outside, get yourself some fresh air, even if it's just out in your backyard, you know, those are the big things. But I think, you know, we're considering, like, right now, like, for camps, what do we do for, you know, I during the summer as a teacher, I'm off, but I usually run, you know, probably six or seven different camps, whether it's a football camp, a baseball camp, or a basketball camp. Those are on edge right now. And then, you know, where do we go next year? It's always going to be a question. You know, do we have to plan for this? Do we come in school? Because, you know, you look at what colleges are potentially doing or not doing. You know, if they're not in session, are they going to be having sports? You know, if we go back as a high school, you know, what happens if we do have somebody that has a case of COVID-19? And then we're, you know, are we back to square one? So there's all these what ifs. You know, that really, really, it makes it challenging, you know, because it's kind of out of our control a little bit. You know, you can only do so much. I tell people all the time, you know, for us with school, it was like, you know, it was like going down to the ball field and you're expected to have a thunderstorm come in and you're debating, do you cancel the game or do you play the game, you know, because if you decide not to play it, you know it's going to be a nice day out. But if you decide that you're going to play it, it's going to start raining. And, like, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. And that's a concern I think everybody has, is you want to keep it safe, but you want to give everybody an opportunity to get back to some normalcy. And you know, there's a fine line. And you'd rather err on the side of caution, I think. So I think that everybody's being a little bit – they don't want to make any decisions just yet on you know, school in the fall or sports in the fall. We're obviously, you know, we're playing it as if we're on, you know, game on until it's called, and we're going to do everything as we normally did and try to get everybody back as soon as we can, and hopefully in the weight room and summer workouts and stuff like that if we can.
You know, Mike, you do bring up a good point. I'll close out by just asking, I think you mentioned the risk factors involved here, and that, yeah, there is a risk factor unless the science changes and we learn something big here in the next several months about going back to school in the fall. But then on top of that, let's say there is school in the fall, then you do add additional risk by playing sports and intermingling with other communities playing sports, I would imagine, right? I mean,
yeah, I mean, we've had interactions before. We've had kids was sort of, you know, concerned that if they had an outbreak, would we have an outbreak? I mean, there's all kinds of things that come up. I mean, you just got to take your precautions. It's unfortunate, but until we have I think the bigger thing right now is there's so much unknown. We don't know technically you know, all the details about this virus. How is it specifically contracted? Can you get it more than once? If you get it once, you know, are your antibodies strong enough that, you know, you can you know, somehow create some sort of, I guess, defense against it? You know, these are all the things that are worried. But like you said, not only going back to school, and I don't think the concern is the kids as much because they, you know, at least is strong in their situations and they don't have to worry as much, but, you know, you got teachers in school, like, you know, as I said, I'm not getting any younger. I'm 47, you know, and guys are getting, you know, we have teachers that are much older than I am, you know, family situations at home that students are going back to their parents and parents, teachers are going back to their parents, in some cases even grandparents. So the interactions are really the tough thing, and we got to be, you know, as I said, it really, really is tough, and you feel for the kids in terms of sports and school, but we have to do what's best for the community, and you'd rather err on the side of caution, and that's going to be the challenge for everybody, is how do we keep going through with this.
You know, what I worry about, Mike, is your mom and dad not being able to get to the Marblehead baseball games this spring. What are they doing?
I know. You know, what's funny is I call my parents every day, and, you know, the biggest fans out there, whether it's football, basketball, or baseball, and I know the umpires and referees are probably happy they don't have to listen to my parents yell at them. But, you know, I call the house, and I ask my mother, and my mother's like, yep, you know, every day he's watching one old sporting event after another, and he still yells at the TV. I think he yelled at the I think it was the 1975 World Series he was watching with the Red Sox, and he still thinks it should have been interference on the bunt and all this other stuff. So it's amazing. It's amazing. And it's amazing what he remembers, you know, as you know, talking to me about it, because there's little things that, you know, obviously I was just a baby in 1975, but he, like, remembers pitch by pitch what goes on. It's, you know, and it's funny just hearing him. And now he started to go through his own scrapbook. So, Bill, if you need any good stories, there's the guy to call right there. He'll go through everything for you. And as I said, he got it down to the smallest detail.
Hey, that's not a bad idea. That's a very good idea. You're right. Yeah. All right. Hey, Mike, thanks for taking some time to join us. Always good talking with you. Oh, by the way, are you hearing anything from the Ivy League and Harvard football in the fall or not yet?
Right. You know, I spoke with my good friend Bernie Corbett, who does Giant Sports Radio and does the football. As we've said before, you know, we're kind of moving forward with the, you know, game on until we hear otherwise. I talked to Bobby Glatz, who's the over at the Varsity Club, who kind of coordinates all of the fundraising events and helps supports all the programs. He's moving forward with the same idea that, yes, we're going to be going forward with it until we hear otherwise, you know. So hopefully we'll be back and getting ready to go, because it's just, you know, I think that's the one thing that brings everybody together is sports. And hopefully we can get a little bit of that on every level.
All right. Well, Mike, hang on the line for just a second. That's Mike Giardi with us, baseball coach at Marblehead High School, here on Shore Sports Night.
Harrington Trophy has been rewarding the North Shore for over 30 years with quality. Harrington Trophy has been rewarding the North Shore for over 30 years with quality custom awards, screen printing, embroidery, and more. We pride our family-owned business on our exceptional customer service and quality products for the right price. Custom t-shirts, sweatshirts, warm-up suits, hats, along with the area's top trophies, plaques, glass awards, we are the one-stop shop for end-of-the-year banquets or advertising your small business through apparel. Come see us at Harrington Trophy, Chestnut Street, Lynn, or harringtontrophy.com.
Enjoy the taste of summer all year round. Pick up an ice cream cake for that special occasion. Cherry Farm Creamery offers the best ice cream right off Route 128 on Conant Street in Danvers. Or visit them at cherryfarmcreamery.com.
This is North Shore Sports Night, and we continue along with our features with some of the North Shore Navigator players for 2020. And joining us right now is Jack Wallace from Winthrop and from Franklin Pierce. And, Jack, welcome. Thanks for taking a few minutes to join us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Jack is a classroom junior this year, but you'll be a senior next year at Franklin Pierce, right?
Yes.
Okay. And because of the COVID-19, you got another year of eligibility. Playing for the Navigators this summer for the first time, hopefully. We've got our fingers crossed on that. But, Jack, tell us about how things were when the season stopped. Where were you and what was going on?
We were in, we just played our last game in North Carolina, and we came back from the trip on a Wednesday, and then 2 days later, we found out the NCAA canceled, like, all the championships for Division II, and we got sent home. Season was, we were doing good towards the end. We definitely left the trip on a very good note, and it sucks that it ended when it did, because I think going into conference play, we really would have done something special.
How had you been doing down there, starting, relieving, so far this year?
I definitely ended my last two. I had a start and then a relief appearance my last two times pitching and carry, and that's when I finally, everything started to come together, and I was really looking forward to the rest of the year, but everything changed after that. But I was happy towards the end. I left on a positive note, which was good.
Jack, can you share a note or two from your couple of previous years there? We probably have some high school kids listening to us and so on, and there some of them will play college ball. Some of them, you know, are interested about the transition from playing high school to college. So, what did you find in your first 2 years at Franklin Pierce?
It was definitely a big adjustment, but I played a lot of travel ball over the summer when I was in high school, and that definitely prepared me a little bit for college, but you always have the welcome to college baseball moment, and you have to realize that everybody's at the same caliber as you. You might be I came from a small high school, so obviously I was the kid that focused on baseball, but then you go to college, and that's everyone who focuses on baseball and gives everything that they have every day. You definitely have to work hard every day to improve, because there's another kid waiting for you to mess up, and they're going to take your spot immediately.
Yeah, in other words, the bench is a little bit stronger at the college level, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, 100%. There's kids on my team that could take my pitching place the second I do bad.
How about a highlight from Winthrop baseball when you were playing there?
Probably the highlight would be, I remember my senior year, we won our first playoff game in probably 10 years. We beat Mystic Valley. That was probably my best moment.
I didn't mean to limit it to just one, but you know, any particular memories from playing high school ball?
I mean, just going where I went to high school, it was played with the same kids from when you were 12 to 18, and that's why I didn't really leave Winthrop and I go to like a private school in the area, because I wanted to play with my friends and enjoy it. My parents would come to every game. My dad works in the town. He did the field that I played on. It meant a lot to me to play for Winthrop.
So now I want to talk to you about the Navigators just ahead, but I also love to have you just mention a couple of things. You played in the Inner City League last summer and in New York 2 summers ago. So tell me about those experiences in 2 different summer ball experiences.
So the Inner City League last summer was really cool. It was nice to see all the local, because my team had a lot of local D3 kids and couple D1 kids in my team. I kind of underestimated the league when I first heard about it. I figured it'd just be like a men's league, but it was really competitive, and I enjoyed playing in it. For the league in New York, I met a lot of great kids, and it was great to, especially after my freshman year didn't go the best, I got a chance to grow as a player and pick up a lot of things from different kids from all over the Northeast with schools. A lot of Division I kids gave me a lot of tips that have played college baseball and been through the ringer. So I learned a lot, definitely. It was a great experience.
How have you grown as a player, would you say, since starting college?
I think my maturity level has definitely grown as I, or how I handle situations on the field. In high school, maybe I'd get a little flustered or not really handle it my best, but I know in college you need to be on your A game. Every pitch, every single play.
So now you come and hopefully play for the Navigators this season, and you know, people are hoping the season they will be able to get a season in. But Jack, now instead of kind of building on what happened at college this spring, you're kind of almost kind of rebuilding at this point. If you do play this summer.
Oh yeah, definitely. Right now, for my pitching, I'm kind of in like a, I'd say like a limbo stage, because I'm hopeful the summer happens and I really would love it to happen, it's just nobody is really certain at the moment, so it's tough to really gauge yourself on where you're going to be. But I, basically everyone will, and it's going to show who really cares about it the most when the time comes, who when we play.
Yeah. Well, Jack, anything else to share with us about either the Navigators or anything else? What are you doing to keep it? Well, clearly now you're still doing your college work, or is that did that just wrap up?
We end in about 2 weeks-ish, so not much left, but...
Maybe an exam or two?
Yeah, the finals will be in like 10 days, and then after that it's pretty much nothing unless you take like a summer class, which I might, but nothing crazy at the moment.
Good. Well, Jack, thanks. I really appreciate you taking some time to join us, and hope to see you this summer out at Fraser Field in Lynn playing some baseball. And anyways, thanks for taking some time.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it. I hope we play.
Yeah. Jack Wallace from Winthrop, from Franklin Pierce, and the North Shore.
All right. Thank you very much, Bill. Nice to hear from Winthrop High School and Franklin Pierce College at the same time. Hope they do get to play. We're going to shift gears a little bit now, bring Tim back in here, along with Gary Larrabee, a golf writer, sports historian. Gary, how are you doing?
Doing wonderful, guys. Thankfully, we're getting some nice weather. We can enjoy the outside, even though we can't go too far. It's just nice to have some nice weather kicking in, which is really a double-edged sword. Can enjoy the weather, but we can't play golf.
Yeah, well, sometimes you can't even enjoy the weather. We were just talking about going for a walk, and this social distancing thing is real. People are paying attention to it, and I got to tell you, man, I'm not seeing any good news out of this thing. So let's talk a little sports here, Gary. Where do you want to start?
No, I haven't seen too much good news either. The big story, though, is for us in the golf world is the fact that we still can't play golf in Massachusetts. There was a meeting amongst all the people who represented all the leading golf major golf associations in Massachusetts with Lieutenant Governor Polito's advisory board, and there was some hope that there might be an announcement to adjust that date for May 18th, but nothing really came of it when the governor spoke at noontime, and I think based on what he said today, far beyond what he was talking about with golf, because there was one question posed to him, but I think the message was loud and clear from Baker. He's not going to take any chances. I can't believe no matter what the advisory board says to him later this week, if they say anything to him about the golf situation, we're going to have to wait for the golf, because the deaths and the cases are still so high. Massachusetts is still a hot spot. And as wonderful as the weather is and as beautiful the golf courses may look when you drive by, I'm afraid, guys, we're going to have to wait a while to play golf, maybe as late as the 18th of May, which is, you know, that next stay-at-home milestone date.
Yeah, well, you know, it's all those people who don't want to wait, who want to rush out, who don't want to wear protective coverings. You know, they're the ones that will get sick, will pass it on, and will take no responsibility. And then when they do get sick, they'll want all this immediate care. And I tell them, get to the back of the line. Because you brought it on yourself. I got no sympathy for you.
No, there was an interesting editorial in today's Salem News, the slow but sure way out of a crisis. And even though New Hampshire's going to allow their golfers to play a week from today, and every other state is playing golf as of tomorrow, because Washington State's going to allow their people to play golf tomorrow, excluding New Hampshire, we've still got three states that are not allowing their golfers to play, and that's Massachusetts, Maryland, and Vermont. And, of course, Vermont's still in the winter state anyways, but...
Does Vermont have a golf course, Gary?
And they have a lot of ski slopes. They turn into golf courses in the summer. You're right.
Hey,
you know, guys, this is still very serious, I think, and you know, I'd love to be out. I would have liked to have been out there playing yesterday or Saturday, and thousands of golfers would have been playing on the golf courses in Massachusetts Saturday and Sunday, and there would have been a lot of jobs being busily filled by people who normally do those. But I think the way Baker spoke today, and the fact that the advisory board may not make any recommendations to him until sometime mid or late next week, leading into the 18th of May, I'm very, very pessimistic that we'll see any golf around here. As I said before, for at least two more weeks, the chances of someone getting sick are still too high. I don't think you're going to see golfers out there wearing masks and rubber gloves when they're swinging on the first tee.
No, of course not. And you know, they're going to put themselves at risk. They'll say, well, I'm not afraid. I don't have it. Well, no one knows whether they have it or not. You know, and that's the most precarious thing. Nobody knows who's carrying it.
Exactly,
and,
right.
You know, and the governor, I don't think, wants to open up any one particular piece of the economy, Gary, because then it's going to snowball at him, and he doesn't want to have to deal with that.
And he talked about even if after the 18th, it could be a very slow rejuvenation of all the businesses in the Massachusetts economy. And I got to believe golf is way down the priority list. Restaurants are going to be near the top. And half of the restaurants that have closed down in the last month may not reopen anyways. But and I think there's just too many people dying. Another 85 deaths today, over 4,000 deaths. Massachusetts is still considered one of the four or five hotspots in the country. I don't think he's a golfer. I think he's just going to hold firm. And you know, we had a you may have seen it last week, Tim. Tom Gorman, a South Shore golf writer who writes for New England Golf. You can find it on the website. Google it easily enough. He wrote two nasty stories in the last 2 weeks. Last week's story attacked viciously Jesse Menakem, the CEO and executive director of Mass Golf, and Baker. It's one thing to attack a politician. It's another thing to attack a fellow who represents virtually all of Massachusetts golf, the clubs, the golfers, and the industry, really. And he really beat up on Jesse Menakem unfairly and way out of line. But the fact remains there were some angry people out there, a lot of angry golfers out there. And I'm afraid, guys, this is just going to have to be a long winning game. Come July, hopefully we can chuckle about the delay we made a big stink about in May, early May. But the game is still on hold, and I'll be writing about it this week in my column in the weekly where I've been relegated these days. And it's just the nature of the business, guys, that the nature of this pandemic cannot take any unnecessary chances. And the billion-dollar Massachusetts golf industry can win another 2 weeks anyways to get back up and running, whether it's public courses, private courses, practice facilities. It's just the way it's going to have to be.
All right, you got Tiger on.
Gary, the thing is, I throw up my friends and neighbors and I tell them, you know, it took 3 months for this virus to kill as many people as soldiers died in Vietnam in 19 years. So when they say, well, you know, the flu killed 70,000 people a year. Okay, well, this has already killed 63,000 people in 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you start doing the math, and what are your numbers going to look like?
These people who are protesting at the state houses around the country, and not too many state houses right now, but ours was attention getter today. In Michigan, the Michigan governor is getting beat up like crazy. They're playing golf in Michigan, but the fact remains the safety factor is such an issue here. I mean, we get 69,000 cases with deaths. And, you know, 100,000 people have been tested. Along with, we all have to get tested because the vaccine's not going to show up for a while. And this is all a broken record, but I think anyone who is interested in golf around here and is listening to us right now is going to be reminded that better to be safe than sorry, and that's exactly the way that Governor Baker's operating right now.
Oh, kudos to him. And you know, I'm surprised the Michigan governor, Gary, you mentioned Michigan. I'm surprised Minnesota didn't call up the National Guard when those nitwit militia guys showed up armed in halls of the state capitol.
Yeah, I mean, it's still
coming to that.
I'm afraid so, and of course it's partly incited by Trump. Trump's a golfer too, so his I don't know how many of his golf courses are open. I presume most of them are open again. They're most of them are resorts. Some of them are private clubs, but he has a stake in that too. And he hasn't said too much about the golf side of it. I think he realizes his picture must be much bigger than that. So he's staying away from that. But who knows? Like I said before, guys, we just have to be patient and wait. It's only the early May. We'll be hopefully chuckling about the way we misbehaved on this thing come June and July, and hopefully we'll get some kind of a normal golf season, and including a normal tournament golf season for at least July, August, and September.
All right, why do you have Tiger as a headliner on my email, Gary?
Well, I came across the compliments of one of my dear buddies, Ollie Cook, former chairman of the two senior opens at one of the senior opens at Salem, and he sent me a fabulous clip. He loves to read the New York tabloids. He got a fabulous story in the New York Post the other day where Tiger's former coach, the great Butch Harmon, says that one of the reasons Tiger got to the top was he was always a prick.
Oh, jeez.
but he meant that, you know, in his mentality on the golf course, not so much off the golf course, even though he was but it's a funny story that you know that's how you become a great player. You got to be a bit of a prick on the golf course, and why Butch Harmon used that term, I'm not sure. But he described the same approach that Brooks Koepka has nowadays, and you know, Tiger had it, and Tiger may be getting it back a little bit. And it's just another example. We're waiting for all of this golf to get back in the flow of a weekend. I gotta believe there'll be some spectacular ratings for the next couple of months once we get the tour up and running again, not for another month, down in Fort Worth. And I just, as you may have seen in my column over the weekend, Rob Oppenheim can't wait, you know, from Salem and Andover, he cannot wait to get back out there. And he's scheduled to play that week at Fort Worth. And he's the kind of guy who likes to play every day, practice every day. And he's been a very good father and husband, though, I understand, down in Winter Park, Florida.
All right, Tim, final comment here. We got to get to Mike Grenier here in a minute.
Okay, that Tiger is saying that the cause of a lot of his physical breakdown was the fact that he ran so much as a younger guy, trying to stay in shape. He did a number on his knees and his back.
Maybe that's part of it, but the fact remains he's probably the best conditioned star golfer we've ever had, and maybe he's paying the price, but he seems to be making a nice bounce back, and that could have been another factor in his physical, all of his physical woes. But the fact remains Tiger's back, and we're all dying to watch Tiger play golf in June.
Hey, Gary, thanks for your insight and your thoughts. And, you know, keep a positive attitude. Keep us informed. And I guess we'll do it again on Monday next week.
I hope we have some good news to report between now and then. Take care, guys.
Me too. Thank you, Gary.
Good night, Gary.
Take care. All right. That is Gary Larrabee, golf writer and sports historian. Tim Kearns is still with us. We're going to take a break and come back with Mike Grenier. And, of course, our sports director, Bill Newell, all with us here this evening. We'll be right back, so hang in there with us. Thank you very much.
I'm Bob Gillis, president of Cape Ann Savings Bank, serving the Cape Ann community with stability and commitment for over 170 years. Since 1846, our customers have relied on our local bank service and big bank benefits. Stop by our offices or call to talk about your banking needs at 978-283-0246. Built on community, capeandsavings.bank.
Member FDIC, member DIF, equal housing lender. Gloucester's Walter Wilkins Insurance Agency is teaming up with Columbia Insurance to deliver a full line of products, personal home and auto policies, as well as a full line of commercial coverage for business owners, including commercial property and commercial vehicle coverage. Wilkins partners with respected companies such as Plymouth Rock, Quincy Mutual, Commerce, and Safeco. For City of Gloucester employees, there are discounts on auto and home policies. Wilkins Insurance is located at 186 Main Street, Gloucester, now partnering with Columbia Insurance, serving the North Shore.
All righty, we continue with North Shore Sports Night, and we bring on the venerable Mike Grenier, sports writer extraordinaire. Mike, how are you doing?
We're doing pretty well, all circumstances considered.
Yeah.
That's all you can hope for.
I know, that's the operative phrase, all things considered. And when I emailed you, Mike, to see what we could talk about, and one of the first things that I saw, I was talking about talking with Tim about this earlier, was they asked the sports writers, I think probably this was Phil Stacy's idea or somebody, but asked the sports writers in the area your favorite high school venue to watch a football game from, and you covered everything. Do you have a favorite local football field that you watch games from?
I know you guys are talking about Hurd Stadium. That always had a great atmosphere. But I think Bertram Field, for me, because in the heyday of the Salem News, we were had that downtown office right on Washington Street in downtown Salem. And there were so many great Friday night football games at Bertram Field. You know, Beverly tended to play on Saturdays, I played a lot of Friday night games back when Ken Perrone was coaching. And, of course, I know you talked to Mike Giotti, who I know very well. And, of course, his dad was one of the assistant coaches with Perrone. There were just so many just a great atmosphere on those Friday night games at Salem High School at Bertram Field. I just thought that was a great place. And also, Manning Bowl, saw a lot of terrific games there. Hurd Stadium, of course. Danvers, although they didn't have very good teams when I was at Salem News for a long time, they didn't have very good teams. But if I had to pick a favorite right now, it would be Bertram Field.
I wasn't considering it because I'm looking at it from the vantage point of a press box, and it's tough. It's a tough place to broadcast from. However, I remember the pride room that Coach Perrone had, and when the team would take the field, 100 players strong, and they had these drills, it used to psych the other kids out of their minds.
I agree. He really had a philosophy of coaching and a sort of a credo that he went by. I think that was part of his philosophy, Rick, was to line up all the seniors, juniors, sophomores, and even the freshmen who weren't on the varsity team, line them up on a Friday night so it looked like you were facing 100 kids. And the team on the opposite side might have like 45 kids. And it had to be a psychological factor for Salem High in those days, a nice advantage for them to have.
The other thing I remember, too, and I'll let Tim join in here in a second, but the other thing I remember was the offensive sets that they would have, like the Dallas Cowboys. They'd only run maybe three plays, but the offensive sets would just be crazy. They'd shift, they'd go around. And it was like watching a Chinese fire drill.
It was. He was a very – you're right. He had maybe it's like – they used to say Red Auerbach only had six plays with the Celtics and he won all those championships. You're right about Perrone. He may have had just three or four basic plays, but they had so many variations off those plays and so much motion that, it just confused opposing defenses. Perrone had success early on. I think it was just the second or third season. I distinctly remember covering, I guess would have been the very earliest Super Bowl games at Boston University, and they lost in overtime. It was just the beginning of a long era of success for Salem High overall, even though they lost that particular Super Bowl game. Matter of fact, they lost on a pitch out, so I guess they had a dose of his own medicine. They were leading the game late. They threw a pitch out. It was fumbled deep in their own territory. The opposing team recovered and scored and beat Salem High. So
okay.
I still remember that game. It had to be like 48 years ago.
Tim, you with us?
Well, yeah. Now, are you going to let me in?
Yes.
The door's open.
Hey, hi, Mike. How are you?
Tim, I've been listening to you guys tonight, and Tim, I'm agreeing with many of the observations you've been making regarding the coronavirus and maybe having too premature plans on getting these games played, whether it be high school, college, pros. I mean, at one point, I was reading that the NCAA. Now, I don't understand how the NCAA could make a logical decision like this. It's so illogical. They were talking about moving the football season up and playing in June in the hot weather, figuring the coronavirus would be killed by temperatures over 80 degrees.
What did they do, elect Trump commissioner of the NCAA?
Exactly. It was one of the dumbest things I've read throughout this entire pandemic, you know. And, you know, I know you talked to Mike Chiatti, and that's a kid I covered when he was at Salem High in every sport. He won a state title with his father playing baseball and won a state title playing basketball with Rick Brunson in 1990, one of the all-time great Salem High athletes. And, of course, you know, I watched that MIAA, North Shore High School Sports, and when the MIAA went ahead and posted that date of May 4th, and we're going to get practices starting on May 4th, and we hope to resume the season on May 11th or May 12th, I said to myself, that's ludicrous. And that's, I guess they were trying to, using that date, throwing it out there because the governor was saying that's a possibility that some things would reopen, or they would, you know, have the stay-at-home advisory might expire on May 4th. But in terms of playing sports, that was wildly optimistic to think that May 4th would be a target date for the spring seasons to resume in Eastern and throughout Massachusetts. And you know, I got texts and messages from coaches saying, "Mike, do you think we're gonna start practice on May 4th, May 5th?" I said, "No." I just thought it was wildly optimistic, and I think it built false hope for all the athletes on the North Shore and throughout Massachusetts. You had kids thinking that they were going to get back out there this week and resume or start spring sports, and that was just never, I thought, a realistic date.
No, and I agree with you, Mike, and I think that maybe the governor erred there while trying to give everybody something to look forward to. He sort of caused his own problems because everybody said, "Oh, May 4th, we're gonna stop. We're gonna go back to school. We're gonna be able to walk out on the field. We're gonna be able to start practice. We're gonna play some games." And everybody took that as set in cement when he was just throwing out maybe a ballpark figure, you know. And when he said, you know, school's out till, you know, for two weeks, and all of a sudden it's to May 4th, and all my teaching colleagues, we were all like, "We're not going back."
Right.
You know,
exactly.
You're still talking a spike. You're still talking, okay, it's going to plateau. But if a plateau just means it's not continuing to go up, but it's still a very high number, people are still dying. I mean, we all saw the Salem News today. The whole front section was obituaries, and there was a page in the second section of obituaries where it used to be one page. Now it's three, four, five pages of obituaries.
Now, the Boston Globe yesterday, Tim, I read the Globe religiously, have for like 55 years or something like that, and they had something like 20 pages of obituaries yesterday.
Yeah.
That rings, that sort of like, it shakes you up when you see that, and you realize just how serious this pandemic is. And in terms of sports, guys, we all want to see sports resume, but at what cost? You want complete safety, whether it's the high school kids of Massachusetts, or the New England Patriots, or the Celtics, or the Red Sox. And then the second part of that, right, guys, is when do you start letting fans into games? Trump is talking about having made-for-TV games and all that. I mean, for him, this is all a political game.
Of course it is. It's not a political game.
You're talking life and death on a daily basis. So at what point do you let fans back into the games? And on a personal level, I took my 5-year-old grandson to his first Red Sox game last summer. He had a blast. We both had a blast. And I had talked to my daughter about taking him again this year. But now that's off the table. There's no way that even if the Red Sox resume on August 1st, there's no way that I would take my 5-year-old grandson and six years old, and sit him in the stands with, let's say, 30 people in the row, in the same row.
Well, Mike, you know,
strangers.
That's an interesting point because, you know, people are talking on the one hand about opening the place up again, you know, opening up the economy. But, you know, there are going to be a lot of people, and I think I'm included among them, who are not going to go. They're going to say, well, it's okay to go to the movies. It's okay to go to a restaurant. It's okay to go to a Red Sox game. And I'm going to say, you know what, not this year.
That's right. And, you know, it's funny. we were watching things over the weekend on TV and more developments, and Gary Larry pointed out this is still spiking in Massachusetts. There's more cases every day, more deaths. And like Tim, like you pointed out, I lived through that Vietnam era when I was in college. I almost had to go to Vietnam.
Yep.
And 57,000 deaths, and now in the country there's over 60,000. And even Trump, who should have been able to nip this in the bud, that's a story for another day. We could talk about that for years. Is saying there's going to be 100,000 Americans who will die. Well, that could top that figure. But, Rick, you're right. I would postpone taking myself to an event until possibly 2021. Even though you're going to see other fans maybe risk it, there's no way I'm risking. I said to my wife, you know, we're not reopening. The country may reopen, the state may reopen, but we're going to observe the mm-hmm. things that we're doing around our neighborhood, which is wearing masks, taking walks in the neighborhood, but distancing ourselves from people. And we're not going to do anything until it's safe for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, as much as we'd love to see sports come back, and I'm sure pro sports, because it's such a big money-making venture, will come back at some point this year, 2020. It doesn't mean that you and I and Tim have to go to games. We have that choice
right.
avoid going to the games for the safety of our families, for the safety of our own safety. We still have to watch out for ourselves before we commit to going to a sporting event. And believe me, we'd love to go back to it, but the culture has changed, the country has changed, and we just have to ride this out until hopefully there's a vaccination or something that will make us feel safer about resuming the sports life that we formerly led.
All right, guys, before we wrap this up, I want to, again, extend a salute to the class of 2020. We've been doing this here at MSO. We have Danvers, we have been talking with the directors of athletics along with their captains and posting Zoom interviews. So we've got a Danvers post up, we've got a Gloucester post up, Gloucester High School, we've got Hamilton Wenham, and we have Newburyport along with Winthrop still to come, and we've got futures coming up with Masconomet, with Peabody High School, and with Amesbury High School. And again, I just want you guys maybe to make a comment on the class of 2020. The captains that we've talked to, guys, once again, Tim, you and I, you know how it is to talk with these kids. I feel that we're in good hands with these kids, to a man and to a woman. These kids are fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's a great deal. So bad for the class of 2020 because they're not getting to play those finals. I think Mike Giardi pointed out that not many of these kids go on to play college sports. So you feel so terrible for these kids. We're not getting to play that final spring season, and that they just have to sort of put things to bed and do what's best for the school and what's best for themselves and their families. And to have a great attitude about it, obviously, it's a wonderful thing to see.
Yeah, you know, as someone who played high school sports, and I look back on all the different levels that I played on, my last year was always my best year, my most productive year. And my senior year, I had a very good year. I didn't get to play my senior year in college for several reasons, and I really missed that because I had a very good junior year, and I was really looking to, again, just continue that momentum into my senior year. And it hurt not to play. So just imagine what a lot of these kids who have had it snuffed out, not by their own choice, but by factors unrelated to anything about them. You know, it's going to be a prom. There's not going to be a graduation. There's not going to be a spring season as they've known it. And right. You know, but the way that, and Rick, as you said, as they've looked at it and they've expressed their thoughts about it, they understand maybe better than some adults the severity of the situation.
And
they're setting an example, Tim, for the younger kids by doing that. And I think that's a phenomenal thing.
Mike, they're setting an example for the adults. I mean, you know, they understand, as you said, Tim. I mean, you watch these kids, and yeah, they're disappointed and they're upset and they're angry, but they understand this is absolutely historically scary, and they're talking about, you know, reaching out to other people, helping other kids. So they're talking to their teammates, even though they're not going to get to play with them. It's just remarkable to see how good these kids are. And you're right, Mike. It's just it's very painful to see, you know, the class of 2020 not have the celebrations that they deserve.
Yeah, it's unprecedented. You know, we use that word, and it's so true right now. Unprecedented. We have, it's uncharted territory, not just in the next 2 weeks, but in the next several months. That's why I think, on a personal level, I'm very leery about the future of high school, college, and pro sports. I will not do anything to risk my family going to a game until things are 100% safe. And I don't know when that's going to be.
All right. I think we're both all in agreement on that. Mike, we'll do it again in a few weeks. We'll take notes and figure out what we can talk about. But
that's right.
There's no dearth of topics when dealing with you, Mike. And I really appreciate picking your brain, man. Thank you.
Well, it's great to talk. You know, it's great that we're bringing this topic. So I love your observations tonight, both of you guys, and Gary Labby and Mike Gianni as well.
Oh, that's awesome. Thanks, Mike, and you're a great part of this. Stay safe, be well, and take care of the family.
Will do, and same for you guys.
All right, Mike, thank you very much.
Mike. Thank you.
Good night. That is Mike Grenier, who is the sports writer emeritus, really, for the Salem News. I was almost going to say Salem Evening News, but it's the Salem News, and of course, Mike, with so many experiences, still has that. Tim, it's the little boy we have in us about sports, isn't it? We still have it, and no matter what the age, you still got it. You heard Mike Giardi talking about his dad, with the fire in the belly, and it's sports. It's just something that you just can't let go.
No, it is, and after I stopped coaching, the springs came around, and it was like, I know I'm supposed to be doing something, but I'm not doing it, and you still look to. You look back to the memories, and you look forward to going and watching games. You look forward to speaking to coaches, speaking to players. You know, reading the write ups, and it's so ingrained into each of our lives, and so to have it all ripped out.
Yeah.
Is the toughest part for people to deal with.
All right, your homework assignment, Tim. I'm doing this with the captains as we talk. I want you to, and I don't want you to cheat. I want you to tell me next week the first sports memory that comes to your mind as an athlete, the one that pops into your head that you automatically remember. Don't cheat. Don't keep thinking of a million of them. It's got to be the first one. So write it down.
I have my first sports memory.
Okay, don't tell it now. I want to know. Not it's not necessarily your first sports memory. It's the first memory that pops into your head when you think about playing sports. Because I got one that's an absolute doozy. So, and it's funny. It wasn't that much fun when it happened. But looking back on it, man, it's funny now. Okay.
All right,
Coach. You stay safe, Coach. We'll talk to you later.
Okay, Rick.
All right, that's Tim Kearns. Bill Proposky, of course, our producer and engineer. Bill Newell's our sports director. You heard him talking with both Mike Giardi and, of course, Jack Wallace, and we appreciate all of that. And thank you to Gary Larrabee, and thank you to Mike Grenier. Thank you guys so much for helping us out. If you want to send us a line here and give us a suggestion, compliment, or complaint, send it on to msonewsports@gmail.com. We can take it. msonewsports@gmail.com. Thank you for being with us. And, of course, this is MSO No Sports. This has been North Shore Sports Night. And please stay safe and do the right thing.